Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+, simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Tuesday afternoon, February the 4th, we're going to talk about the victims of the sexual revolution. They are many. Many of them are unwittingly victims. Not to engage in kind of a victim mentality, but to understand what the false promises of the sexual revolution have been for the last 50 years and the kind of bitter fruit that is born in the lives of people, sometimes realizing only too late from those false promises. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is a regular guest, founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the book Smart Sex and Love and Economics. Jennifer, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you, Todd. Thanks for having me.
When did you personally, in the course of your life story, so to speak, realize that the promises you had been sold in the sexual revolution were false?
Oh, boy, Todd, that's a hard one because it took me a while to put all the pieces together, you know. You can see, kind of one thing after another that it's not working, you know. So I realized that I had postponed childbearing too long, and that would have been, you know, in my early 30s, because I had a plan that I was going to, once I got tenure at George Mason, that I would have a baby at the beginning of the summer and then go right back to work in September and put the baby in daycare, you know, and that was my big plan for myself. And then it turned out I couldn't get pregnant right on demand. The baby didn't come during the month that I had set aside for it. And so that was kind of my first clue that something was wrong. But to put it all together and to see that it's not just postponed fertility, it's not just divorce, it's not just the false promises of contraception. It's the whole kettle of fish. It's taken me most of my adult life to put together that this is one thing called the sexual revolution and that it isn't really working for pretty much anybody.
And see, that's a broad statement because I think a lot of people might be willing to hear your critique and say, well, sure, Jennifer, it didn't work for you, but it does work for so many. How can you say it's not working for anybody?
Well, see, here's the thing. The group that's most likely to be trotted out as working and proof that it was necessary are your highly educated career women. You know, if it weren't for contraception, if it weren't for abortion, women wouldn't be able to achieve the kind of educational goals that they can achieve now. They wouldn't be able to have the kind of positions of leadership in business and industry and academia and so on if it weren't for the sexual revolution, namely contraception and abortion. But the fact is, that's me. That's my category. I did that. And it didn't really work for me either because what we ended up with was a lot of us women, a lot of women of my generation, more women coming along behind us facing the same thing, is that by the time you're ready professionally and economically to become a mother, your peak fertility years are behind you. And so you end up with, you know, having to face infertility, and you end up either maybe not being married at all or being married and having fewer children than you had really hoped to have, or maybe no children at all. And so I've actually given a name to that person. I call that person the heartbroken career woman. And I think that the heartbroken career woman stands as a rebuke to this part of the sexual revolution that says, oh, we're going to free women to get them out of the nursery and into the world of work. Well, the fact is, women were moving out into the labor force and moving out into higher education well before the sexual revolution. That trend was already in place. And so what we should have been doing is to build up the family and the woman's career path at the same time, work it out inside the family rather than breaking down the family the way that we have been doing. So I, you know, honestly, the heartbroken career woman is a rebuke to the to the sexual revolution and its ideology, which is why she has never been given a name, she has never been identified, and she's not supposed to speak up and say that, hey, this really stunk. And I paid too high of a price for my career and my education, and nobody told me that this was going to be the price. And now that I'm 35 or 40 or 45, there is literally nothing I can do to go back and change that. And there are a lot of those women out there, Todd.
I think this is an important thing to point out, or at least to explore. Was there a point at which you said, you know, I'm going to get on the train that is the sexual revolution. I'm going to buy into it and see where it takes me, only to discover at the end of the line these things? Or was this, as I suspected this for many women, so much the atmosphere of our lives, so pervasive of our culture, that you were on the train before you even knew you bought a ticket?
Yeah, I think that's right, Todd. I think we were all on the train before we knew we bought a ticket. That's a great phrase. That's a great phrase. And, you know, the thing that's so seductive about the sexual revolution is that we all thought that we were going to have sex without having babies. And that was the ticket that got us on the train, because that was very appealing, you see. Everybody thinks that sounds like a lot of fun. Well, now we're to the point where we can't have babies, or we've given up so much to avoid having those babies, and we've sacrificed so much in terms of relationality and our ability to be in relationship with other people. Now we're to the point, instead of having sex without babies, now we're having babies without sex, which I'm pretty sure is not as much fun as the old-fashioned way.
So where do you think this has left us now? If you're going to kind of paint the picture for our listeners of the landscape left over at this point, this stage in the sexual revolution, the revolution is, let's just say for the sake of argument, paused for a moment. What does it look like outside the window in America?
Well, I wish I could say it was paused, but let's just pretend we can pause, you know, hit the pause button for a moment, and let's look around. What we have is the two defining features of the sexual revolution, I would say, is number one, the idea that sex and procreation can be separated from each other, and that both can be separated from marriage. That's a very powerful idea that is still working its way through the society. And the second idea, I would say, is a gender ideology that says that men and women are completely interchangeable. And that, too, is a very powerful idea that is working its way through society, mostly through the legal system. You know, in other words, the power of law and as well as the entertainment media and academia and culture and so on, they're all pushing towards making everybody believe that men and women are completely interchangeable, even though contrary evidence flies up into our faces every day, you know. So it's certainly possible to treat men and women with equal dignity without signing on for this whole gender ideology. And so where we are right now, I would say, is that redefining marriage to remove the gender requirement is further breaking down the connection between babies and sex and parenthood and marriage, right? Because a same-sex couple obviously can't have a child together. A gamete has got to come into the relationship from outside the relationship. And so now so many of these connections that used to be organically united under the heading of marriage are being either spun off completely, or we're going to try to hold them together with contracts and some kind of force of law to come in when things break down. The family courts are going to get involved. So that's where we're headed. You know, we're headed towards the buying and selling of gametes, which means the buying and selling of children, right? And in the end, we're going to have contract parenting rather than one man, one woman united together with their children for a lifetime for the good of those children. Contracts, by and large, contracts are not meant to be for life. In fact, usually the law doesn't allow you to make a contract that lasts in perpetuity. And yet, for family life, you know, your mother is your mother forever, and your father is your father forever, and the law should recognize that rather than hinder it. And so that's where the sexual revolution has led us, is to this whole breakdown of the relationships among children and their parents, and also of parents and sex partners amongst themselves. All of that has become negotiable and disposable, you know. That's where the sexual revolution has left us.
It was originally sold in terms of personal liberty for women, also for men. But you say sexual revolution has actually turned out to be a totalitarian movement. What do you mean by that?
Well, I see it in two different phases. I mean, first of all, if you look at what goes on in the family courts and the aftermath of a marital breakdown or a relationship breakdown, the family courts have far more jurisdiction over the private lives of individuals than any other agency in society. You know, I mean, the family court can tell you whether you're allowed to move, how much time you get to spend with your own children. People who are innocent of any crime, people who are completely blameless, end up having this agency of the government micromanaging their household and their lives. And so where no-fault divorce led was to saying, well, gosh, we're free here. We're free to end our marriage for any reason or no reason. But to clean it up on the backside, the state roars in with more and more potent infringements of personal liberty and more encroachments upon the life, inner life of the family. We would have been far better off, in most cases, you'd be far better off to try to work it out yourself and stay out of the court as best you can. So that's one huge area where the power of the state has just expanded in a radical way, where so just breaking down the boundary between private and public. The other way that I think the sexual revolution has been a totalitarian movement, Todd, is that its premises are false. I mean, it's simply not true that men and women are interchangeable. It's simply not true that sex and babies are unconnected to each other. And in order to make people believe it's true or act as if it's true, you have got to do a lot of propaganda efforts. You have got to do a lot of work. You've got to have a lot of legal stuff going on and a lot of social and cultural machinery in place to overwrite the differences between men and women as they keep popping up, and to overwrite the connection between mothers and fathers and their children as it keeps popping up. And so that's, I think, why we have this feeling that we're, you know, a lot of people, I think, have the feeling that we're being crushed somehow, that there's this sort of hand laying down on top of people. I think that's where that's coming from. You know, is the idea that the state is going to tell you that you can't have a father-daughter dance at a public school because it's improper gender stereotypes. You know, I mean, that kind of stuff is most people, I think, is heavy-handed and crazy, and yet it's going on. And if you're committed to the gender ideology, it has to go on. You know, it's not an incidental feature of the thing. It's not a bug. It's a feature, as they would say.
Have men been victim of the sexual revolution as well, Jennifer?
Oh gosh, yes. I mean, a lot of men have suffered terribly at the hands of the family courts. You know, men who have wanted to be married and who've wanted to be good fathers and who, you know, who've had a wife abandon them for another guy. We don't hear about those cases very much, do we? I mean, it's always the woman as victim. But you know, common sense would tell you, especially if you really believe men and women are completely interchangeable, you should be committed to the idea that there are at least as many women cheating as there are men cheating. You know, well, I don't want to go there particularly, but the fact is, those men do exist who have been wronged by their wives, and who've been wronged by the family courts, and who are, you know, ordered to pay to take care of children that they may never see. You know. So there are many injustices all around. You know, that's one kind of tangible way that men have been harmed. But I think the deeper way men have been harmed, Todd, is that a lot of the sexual revolution really is an attack on fatherhood and on fatherhood as fathers as authority figures, as legitimate authority figures. You know, if you can remove the father as the authority figure from the home, the way is now open for the state to move in to exercise its authority, or for advertisers or marketers to move in and to market to children with a lessened sense of adult authority in the household, you know. So taking the head off of the family like that, taking the authority figure out of the family, it has proven to be something, you know, that those who would remake society feel they need to do. And it's certainly not to the benefit of individual men who are trying very hard to be fathers.
Finally, then, with only about 30 seconds, and speaking of the victims of the sexual revolution, the Ruth Institute's going to be hosting this conference late next week in Carlsbad, California. You've called it Healing the 21st Century Family. With about 30 seconds here, Jen, tell us about it.
Well, yes, we welcome anybody to come in from any place to join us to work on healing the family of the 21st century. And we're especially reaching out to victims of the sexual revolution. As I've already mentioned, the heartbroken career woman, the adult child of divorce, the reluctantly divorced, all of those people, we would welcome anyone to come to Carlsbad, California, to join us for this conference. It's the first time we've ever done anything like this, and we're very excited about it. It will have some components of information, but it will also have healing processes and components as well. So be very interactive, and you can find out all about it at ruthinstitute.org. And I really hope your listeners will come see us in Carlsbad, California, where it is quite warm, I may say.
Folks, you'll find a link to Healing the 21st Century Family, February the 15th in Carlsbad, California, under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she is author of the books Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Jennifer, thank you very much.
Thank you, Todd.
The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February is a children's book, but it focuses on, well, a very mature doctrine of Scripture, vocation, your calling. Does God have a calling for kids? The title of the book is How Can I Help? God's Calling for Kids. It's by Mary Murby. She's a regular guest on the program. It comes from Concordia Publishing House, and you could find out more at our website, issuesetc.org. You'll find that book on every page of our website. Call Concordia Publishing House and order this children's book, How Can I Help? God's Calling for Kids, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll talk with Dr. Paul Meyer about recent biblical archaeology discoveries there. We'll discuss cohabitation with Adrian Dorr-Hines, and we'll talk with Terry Mattingly about media coverage of religion. That's tomorrow on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Do you want a church with a rockin' band and a sermon series to help you live a better life? It's not here. Bethany Evangelical Lutheran Church in Fairview Heights offers authentic, historic Christianity to a world awash in fads and entertainment, and offers forgiveness of sins to people overwhelmed with guilt and shame. Join us Sundays at 9:30 on Old Collinsville Road in Fairview Heights, Illinois, to receive the life-giving gifts of God with us. Find out more online at bethanylcms.org.